97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, well, good afternoon. Welcome to a very special Labor Day weekend edition of the Reardon Roundtable. We have our panel set to go here in the studio this afternoon. Former St. Louis County Police Chief Tim Fitch is here. Hello, Chief. How are you?
Happy Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. Ted House is here, former circuit judge and former presiding judge of the 11th Circuit, and he was a state senator and state rep. Hello, Ted. Welcome back. How are you doing this afternoon?
Mark, wonderful. Thank you for the invitation.
We're going to do a little bit of something different here just because of the breaking news, so you guys just hang out with your headphones, and I'm going to visit with my friend Phil Holloway, who is the host of the Megyn Kelly True Crime Show, and we have a mistrial, Phil, that has finally been declared in this crazy case that we've been following for weeks now. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. I hope you are, my friend.
I am. I just listened to Kevin Reddington's news conference. He feels like he won this case. He feels like, yeah. He had 11 jurors on his side. There was the one holdout. They couldn't come to an agreement with that holdout, so the judge really did. The only thing he could do is declare a mistrial. It looks like maybe they're going to try this again. I mean, Kevin said he'd be willing to try it again with a jury. He could go to a judge trial if, in fact, it was second-degree murder. But thoughts on what happened today, Phil?
Well, this was, I'm not surprised that it was a hung jury, but I am surprised that he was as close to an outright acquittal, or at least a not guilty by reason of insanity, as he was. In fact, he had 11 votes, but he had 12 jurors who had doubts. And that was the issue today was this juror who apparently admitted in the jury room that he had doubts, but he refused to follow the judge's instructions that say, hey, look, if you have those kind of doubts, it is your duty to acquit. And so it's not really optional. And so that was what the fuss was about today. Reddington wanted that juror who was not following instructions, wanted him off. And they wanted him to be replaced by an alternate because yesterday, when that note came out yesterday, Reddington knew because the note said this one person just won't vote for not guilty. So he knew how close they were.
Yeah, and so he had one Hail Mary that he threw this morning. I mean, the mistrial was basically declared, and then he asked for permission to try to get a stay, and that just didn't work. It took a couple hours. The judge actually said, we're going to give you an hour. I think in the end, it took 2 hours, and that didn't come through. So now they move forward, and there are some things that are going to happen post-trial. But it does seem, by every indication so far, that they may try this case again, Phil.
They might, but here's the thing. Kevin Reddington was not necessarily playing the game that you think he was playing, because if he objects to a mistrial and a mistrial is granted over the defense objection, the Constitution, and particularly our body of law as it pertains to double jeopardy, says that you cannot have a retrial after a mistrial that was done over the defendant's objection unless the mistrial was what we call a manifest necessity. So it's when the defense opposes the mistrial, it's harder. You got to justify it. So he's going to file a special kind of an appeal. It's called a plea in bar. And he's going to say, look, you can't have another, you can't try her again because it would be unconstitutional double jeopardy. And so that is going to have to work its way through the trial court and then up through the appeals court probably as well. And at the same time, he's got incredible bargaining power now. He's got, a trial behind him that even with everything the state threw at it, they had 12 people who actually had, serious doubt and 11 who wanted to cut her loose on a not guilty by reason of insanity. So as forceful as the prosecutor was at his press conference and emotional, I think that he needs to kind of take a breath, come back next week when he's not worked up, and make a practical decision about whether they want to try her again or try to work out some other kind of deal with the defense.
Did you hear Kevin Reddington rip the juror pretty significantly in his post-trial remarks here a short time ago? He basically said, I hope he can sleep at night.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously upset about it. And this might be what we call a stealth juror, which is people who get on a jury, and regardless of what they think about the evidence, you usually see it in the context of just, you know, guilt or innocence. Somebody will hold out, they will be a stealth juror, and they will go on that jury with an agenda to keep someone from being convicted. So we see it sometimes the other way around, but a stealth juror is one that doesn't follow the law, and they vote in a certain way because they have some kind of certain agenda. And it seems to me that maybe Clancy believes that this person was such a stealth juror.
Yeah, we also have civil trials in the works as well, so this is not going away. Phil, thanks for the help this week, as always. I really appreciate it. Have a very good Labor Day weekend.
You as well, my friend.
All right, take care. That's Phil Holloway, is the host of the Megyn Kelly True Crime Show. We have a couple of people in the studio, probably couldn't be better panelists, in Tim Fitch and Ted House here, because you guys both know the law. You are a judge, Ted. I mean, I'll start with you, Chief Fitch. It's just a horrible, horrible circumstance. And I've had empathy for the mental health aspect of this because of my experience with mental health. But I also have a big problem in not focusing on these victims, you know, where I think Cora Dawson and Kellen, I like to, you know, mention their names because I think it's important. And there are a lot of people out there that feel like she just got off scot-free when she's a very evil person. So people are very split on this across the country.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I will tell you, I think if this suspect was the father and not the mother, the verdict would have been much different. There is a lot of sympathy, and I've had a front row seat to mental illness my entire career. And to see this in person, I have a family member that had postpartum depression, and meds were messed up, and there was a suicide attempt and things like that. And so I do have some. But however, there are three dead children here, and someone has to speak for those kids, and someone has to say what she did was wrong. And that hasn't happened yet. So we'll have to see. But I will tell you, if you just looked at some of the spectators outside the courtroom and some of the comments, I don't know if you saw the DA's speech today, basically, you had hecklers in there and, you know, why didn't you protect the kids before she killed them? And why weren't you concerned? I mean, it was all of that. Probably some of the same people we saw at Luigi Mangione's appearances in New York. Same kind of concept where they feel sympathy for that. And we're seeing more and more of that.
Yeah, look, I think that there's extremes on both sides here. I mean, the people that are cheerleading for Lindsey Clancy, that baffles me, considering the nature of this crime. On the other hand, I do think that there's people on the other side that are condemning her without having the ability to have a little empathy for what might have happened. And by the way, Kevin Reddington did a pretty good job in those weeks leading up to closing arguments to try to prove his case. And I think by evidence of where the jury was, he almost had a victory here. His closing arguments, Ted, I don't know if you saw those. I reread those yesterday. Not very good. He was very all over the place and scattered. But what are your thoughts? Because you've been a judge before. You've seen probably juries deadlock. This has been a fascinating just exercise in legality here in America.
Well, Mark, I've tried a lot of jury trials, and I know Tim Fitch has been involved in a lot of criminal jury trials. It's the judge's job to maintain the decorum in the courtroom, of course. They can't necessarily control what goes on outside of the courtroom. But in order to secure a conviction in a criminal case, the state has to prove that the defendant committed every element of the offense beyond a reasonable doubt. Proof beyond a reasonable doubt is proof that leaves you firmly convinced of the defendant's guilt. It does not require proof that overcomes every possible doubt. I'm pretty surprised in this case that the judge let the trial go on as long as he did. What was it? 7 days of deliberation.
7 days of deliberation.
That's
yeah.
a long time yeah. in a criminal trial. And I don't think I ever would have let that trial go on that long, because you really do risk getting reversed on appeal if you do that. And if it's a hung jury, then it's a mistrial, and apparently the judge ultimately decided to do the right thing.
A lot of people were questioning whether or not, and you know, I've seen sequestered juries and non-sequestered juries, but this was not a sequestered jury. And then I can't remember, is there a possibility, this may be state to state, can you have a non-sequestered jury for the trial and then sequester them for deliberations?
You can do okay. that. It's unusual.
Is it unusual to you that they weren't sequestered in this case or not?
No, I think sequestration is an extreme situation. You don't want to do it unless you absolutely have to protect the rights of the victims and the defendant and the state as well. So I'm not surprised there was no sequestration in this case.
Chief, you know, we were talking about this, all three of us, before the show, and, you know, the judge made it very well known this morning that he had a lot of, you know, he was thanking the jury over and over. He wanted to do it even in person, and I think he did. He asked permission to come into the room and thank them in person. But it's a jury that went through 7 weeks, 7 days of these hard deliberations. I'm sure that that jury room was very, very tense, and there were a lot of emotions involved. I thought the judge, by the way, Judge Sullivan in this case, did a really, really good job. I thought that he was very effective in trying to manage all this. But it's crazy to me that you have the two sides that are so divided on this and seemingly not able to see anything through each side. And that's kind of where the country is right now.
No doubt.
Unfortunately, that speaks volumes about where we are, right?
Yeah, no doubt about that. And you know what I don't know is, was there a change of venue on this?
No, there wasn't. And, you know, that's another thing I think that was questioned earlier this week or throughout these conversations. But one of the things I want to circle back to, something I forgot to make a point on, because you've seen crime scene photos. You've seen crime scenes, okay?
Right.
And as a judge, same thing, Ted, with you, right? I have covered murder trials. I've seen evidence in murder trials and things like that. But what these jurors and really what that whole courtroom had to go through in seeing these pictures and hearing the calls and hearing the screams, all that stuff, I don't know how a jury gets through that, honestly, because you're going to be affected by that. I don't care who you are.
It's bad. They'll be affected the rest of their lives. You know, I saw many child deaths in my career. And one of the worst things to do when I was in homicide is we had to go to the autopsies of all the murder victims. And there's nothing worse than seeing an autopsy of a child, especially at the time I had two children little myself. There's nothing worse than that. And I don't know that you ever get through that. So these jurors will be profoundly affected by this. And I think that's why the judge really wanted to spend some time with them to let them know, you know, what services are available to them and those type of things after seeing this and living with this for all those weeks.
Because I think they're going to need some help.
No doubt.
I always met with jurors after every trial and sometimes had to explain to jurors, you know, I understand the psychological trauma that you have endured. And I would also explain to them, though, that to some extent, that's the price of liberty. That's the price of freedom in our country because of the United States Constitution granting the right to a jury trial. And a jury trial requires jurors.
Yeah.
And that's just where we are. But certainly it's good for the state to make services available to those jurors who may need those.
And what you just said, Ted, is really, I think Judge Sullivan said the same thing a couple of different times this week about, you know, when he was thanking the jurors for their service, but also reminding them that, you know, they're playing a very important role. And I think my experience, you guys would know a lot better than me, but, you know, juries are hard to predict, right? I always tell this story of a case that I covered in Boone County, and this was before cell phones, right? And the courthouse was right next to this place called Boone Tavern where we all hung out. Ted, you probably know Boone Tavern, right? And the jury goes into deliberations, and I think most of us, including the prosecutor and defense, thought this was going to be a fairly long deliberation. We barely sat down to order lunch at Boone Tavern and a note came over that they were in. I mean, it was like 15 or 20 minutes. So that's just an example of how juries are unpredictable and you don't know exactly where they're going to go. I mean, think about this, and I talked about this a little bit yesterday. There's not many places that are as secret as a jury room in this country, right? I mean, the jurors can come out. I don't think there was a gag order. So I think they're able to speak freely if they want to. But then the question is, do you want to draw attention to yourself, right?
Yeah, because you know there's going to be people against you.
No matter what.
And no matter what side you take.
All right, speaking of that, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We had a big court decision by the Missouri Supreme Court yesterday that's going to affect or potentially may affect the election in November. There are certainly two divided sides on all of this. We'll get to it next. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. Tim Fitch, Ted House on my panel. All right, so Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. Former St. Louis County Police Chief Tim Fitch is on our panel. Also, Ted House, who is a former judge and state senator and state representative. All right, so we talked about the legal mess that is the Lindsey Clancy case. Ted, I'll start with you here on the Missouri Map Madness, which happened when I was on the air yesterday. I did have the Attorney General Catherine Hanaway on the show. So the Supreme Court has unanimously, the Missouri Supreme Court, blocked new congressional districts that were drawn by the legislature, backed by the president, for being used in the November election and ordered a statewide vote on whether to uphold or reject the new map. So there's an immediate stay that was, first of all, she went to the Supreme Court. I think she was denied, but Catherine Hanaway is going to the Supreme Court saying that this has thrust our state into a full-fledged constitutional crisis. Now, no matter what you think or what side you're on, Democrat, Republican, the thing that jumps out to me is, and I don't know what the recourse is you had people that voted in this primary a few weeks ago that now will potentially be voting for someone different than was on the ballot in August. So I understand that there's questions about what the Secretary of State did and the process and all these things. But isn't that the very definition of disenfranchising voters?
That could have easily been prevented if the Secretary of State had followed the Constitution of the state of Missouri. In America, the people should control the government and not the other way around. And what the Missouri Supreme Court said yesterday, the rather conservative Missouri Supreme Court, in a 7-0 unanimous decision, was ordering the Secretary of State and the governor and the Attorney General to follow the Constitution. And that means that the people get to vote on the Trump gerrymandered map that the legislature passed in 2025. And the Supreme Court did the only thing they could possibly do yesterday.
But what do you say to the people who voted for a candidate? Now they can't even have that person on the ballot. I mean, what's the recourse for those voters?
There's no question that that is unprecedented. But again, that could have, if you read, I urge everybody to read the opinion. It's not that long. You can Google it. And the Missouri Supreme Court admonishes the Secretary of State for allowing that to happen. But it's, you're just going to have to vote in the numbered district in which you live. And that's the situation that the Republicans have put us in.
Denny Hoskins, who's the Secretary of State, waited until the primary election in August to reject the petition. There were signatures that were submitted in December. And here's what the court said. The referendum petition was legal, sufficient, and timely, and the Secretary incorrectly concluded otherwise. The legislation containing the new districts did not go into effect and will not go into effect unless they are approved by the voters. As a result, the congressional map adopted after the 2020 census remains in full force and effect for the November 2026 general election. Catherine Hanaway, Denny Hoskins don't like this right now. They say it's a violation of federal law. Hanaway said, never before in American history has a court overturned a congressional map after a primary and before a general election. Now, to go on the record here, and some people might know this, I didn't like this mid-decade change of the maps anyway. Okay, so I'm kind of on the record as not being for that. However, I see the Democrats gleefully do this in other states as well. But I don't know if you can sum this up other than this is kind of a mess right now, Chief, isn't it?
That's about the best light you can cast it in, a mess.
Yeah.
So what happens with Rick Bratton? Will he still be on the ballot with Emmanuel Cleaver? Do we know the answer to that?
So explain. That's the district on the Kansas City side where Rick Bratton was elected as the nominee, right? And Emmanuel Cleaver, basically, they threw him out of his district, essentially, didn't they?
Yeah, now he's back in his district.
Right.
With the court ruling. So what happens with Rick Bratton?
Ted, do you have an answer to that?
I think that the opinion from the Missouri Supreme Court is clear. Rick Bratton is going to run against Emmanuel Cleaver in the 5th Congressional District.
So,
and that's what we're left with.
Which Emmanuel wins every time by 55% or higher. So it kind of goes back to, you know, it's a win on the Democrat side. But Rick Bratton doesn't live in that district, which you don't have to for U.S. Congress. You don't have to live in the district
right.
you're running.
A lot of people
in.
Don't know that.
So that would be my guess, too, Ted, that he will be on the ballot with Emmanuel Cleaver, Republican versus Democrat, and probably Emmanuel Cleaver will win, as he usually does in that district.
So when you have people voting on this, you know, one of the things that happens, and, you know, all this initiative petition stuff drove me crazy anyway, and I think it's confusing for people, but you'd have a hard time convincing me that people are going to be educated and really know what they're voting on when it comes to those maps in November, because it is kind of a confusing issue. That means it will likely fail, right? I mean, I think that the conventional wisdom would be it's not going to pass. Any different thoughts on that?
What if it passes? Then do you vote for Rick Bratton in the on the same ballot and he now wins that district?
No, because I think the court would rule that the maps would be in effect for future elections, not the current election.
So you think that's...
I understand the question, but
right.
Yeah,
it
this is where it gets
It would
tricky.
Only be applied prospectively for future elections beginning in 2028.
Okay,
so the 2026 election is the original 2022 decennial census map.
So the Attorney General is going to, and is in the process, she claims on her X feed, appeal this to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, if I do the math right, they have exactly 4 days to rule, because we have to have a court-ordered ballot change that's due by September 8th. That's Tuesday. So you got the weekend. I guess the Supreme Court doesn't work on the weekends. So they've got Monday imparted Tuesday, or at least close.
Well, Monday's a holiday.
Monday's a holiday. So we're really talking about one day to make a decision for the Supreme. My guess is the Supreme Court of the United States will say something about making beds and laying in it.
They'll kick it back.
It'll
probably
be something like that, and we'll be right back to where we started before that. But you know, I've seen a lot of the postings. You know, Denny Hoskins standing there with a baseball bat today, and I'm going to always fight for your rights. So they're in damage control right now. And I get that. I understand how that works. So
okay, but let's also be honest about this, because I think you have to be. Look, this has not been a good 6-week stretch for Republicans in Missouri. I mean, they got their asses kicked in the primary on the ballot issues, and we all kind of saw it coming, right? They mangled. I certainly think they mangled. There were both those ballot issues got smoked, but on the initiative petition thing, no one even really talked about it or campaigned for it or anything like that. And now this happens. So it's not really. Governor Kehoe's been there for a couple years. Yeah. I like Mike. I think he's doing the right thing. I did support him on phasing out the income tax. I know why voters voted against it, though, because of the process. But you know, this is not a win for the governor and for this administration.
There's nothing good for conservatives of the state that have taken place in the last 30 days. It just, there's not. And remember, the Supreme Court, 7 justices, right? 5 of them were appointed by Republican governors. And it was a 7-0 vote.
It was unanimous.
So
right.
In August, Mark, the people of Missouri overwhelmingly rejected the core of the Republican agenda in Amendments 4 and 5. And it has not been a good summer for the Republicans.
Well, first
but
of all,
it's because of their overreach.
I'm going to take you back to the Amendment 2 thing, because look, the voters decided that based on a lot of lies from the opponents, and they were very effective. And my old friend Scott Charton was very effective in spreading lies about how every little tax was going to go up. It was ridiculous. Now, I've criticized the legislature. I know that they put the cart before the horse. But the side that was against Amendment 2, they lied about everything. Complete lies. I had a realtor on Facebook. This is my favorite. You know, you buy a $300,000 house, your taxes are going up $43,000. Shut the hell up. So people bought into the scare tactics. That's what happened on that race. I think overall, the people of Missouri would like to keep more of their money in their paychecks. I don't think that was the issue. I think that they screwed it up and they sent it to the ballot and they didn't campaign properly for it. But I don't think that that completely took away Governor Kehoe's agenda, Republicans' agenda.
Yeah, and I think what they should have done first, and now I think we'll start talking about this in December when they pre-file the bills, is a higher hurdle than 50% plus one to amend the Constitution. Whatever that would be, 53%, 56%.
Well, that's probably what they should have done to begin
with. That's
what
I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm saying.
I would be open to a higher standard for amending the Constitution.
There should be to amend the Constitution.
But what they did was make it virtually impossible to amend the Constitution through a citizen-initiated petition. And ultimately, the people have to have control of the government. And that's why this was so overwhelmingly
rejected. Well, on that one, I understand why people voted. I voted against it. I will tell you, in the end, I voted against that because I thought it was flawed. The way that they were trying to do it.
You're a wise person.
Well, every once in a while, I am.
Now,
hang on.
If I may respectfully disagree with you on the Mark Reardon show on the tax issue, I mean, it was blatant. It was a huge tax cut for the wealthiest of Missourians, and it transferred
the
burden.
It was a tax cut for people who work and they get a paycheck. The wealthiest Missourians are getting money off the stock market right
and
now.
And it transferred the burden onto the middle class and onto the poor, because we know
you don't know that
had to raise sales taxes.
But you
it
don't know
inevitable.
Where the taxes would have been raised on. I mean, I offer like
either
I
got, that or the whole state shuts down, and because income taxes is the biggest funder of general revenue in Missouri.
Right. I mean, we could. This is a terrible thought. I know that we could think about not spending as much, but nobody wants to do that. But you know, you have. I think you can. I can make a pretty good case that there are some services that probably should have taxes on them. Look, I got a haircut this week because I have awesome hair. You know that, Chief. And I don't think paying 70 more cents on a haircut is outrageous when some services are certainly able to take on that. I know it's a burden for business owners, but look, as far as I'm concerned, I'll restate: the Republicans got their asses kicked on both those. Okay. They're going to have to figure it out. We're coming back with more. Hang in there. All right, I got a couple other things certainly that I want to get to in the next 25 minutes or so on the roundtable. Tim Fitch and Ted House on the panel, but let's just briefly kind of close the loop on the November election from this perspective. There's a couple of things that we'll be voting on that maybe are not getting as much attention. One of them is Amendment 6, Tim Fitch, and you were sort of talking about that before the show this afternoon. Explain what that would do.
Yeah, I tell you what, this is going to be a wicked one. So basically, it'll be on the November ballot. It's one of those direct democracy protection measures. It would severely limit the legislator's ability to rewrite or repeal laws and constitutional amendments passed by voters through the initiative process. So just think, if they want to make any changes, even cosmetic changes, it would take 80% in the Senate and the House to pass those changes. And then they still, have to be voted on. So, you know, with every legislation, being a former legislator, and Ted, you know this as well, everything needs to be cleaned up. And it doesn't have to be significantly modified, but there are things you like, okay, we didn't think about that when we wrote this. We need to fix this. Guess what? If Amendment 6 passes,
80% threshold, 80%, too hard to beat.
I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. Ted House.
So this Missouri legislature has reversed almost everything the people of Missouri have voted on for the past 10 years. Medicaid expansion, you can go right down the list. And so there has to be some protection about that. But you know what, Tim? As a former state senator, I'm a little concerned about an 80% threshold to pass anything. You know, if you can get 80% of the legislature to agree on what day of the week it is,
that's a good day. Here's my thing on this is that I hate to agree with Ted House on something, but I agree from
it
this perspective.
It feels good. Do it.
No, but I don't like the fact that the state weighs in. I get the process might be flawed, whatever. And then, to your point, the lawmakers go right back in and they try to undo it. And whether there are nuances to that or not, and there are, doesn't matter because of the way that the media covers it. And then everyone thinks, look, we just voted on this and the lawmakers are not doing what we want to do. So from a perspective of trying to fix that, I understand it. But man, that 80% threshold is what catches your attention, right?
I have a suggestion, though. How about we replace the legislators who continuously go against the will of the people?
Well,
there's a thought.
In
right
theory,
there.
That's what we're supposed to do, right?
That
never seems to happen.
We have that opportunity in November.
Now, we have another, there's Amendment 3. There's another abortion amendment on the ballot, and that's going to be kind of fascinating, too. Thoughts on that moving forward? The campaigns are going to start, I think, really kicking in on some of these things soon.
I've already got my yes on 3 sign, so I hope that's the direction it goes, but I'm not convinced that's the direction it's going to go. I think people kind of have an appetite for fighting their legislators right now. And of course, you know, they're like, we already had a vote on this and we already voted.
Right.
Isn't this over? Isn't it fine?
Exactly.
Now you're bringing it up again. You know, but that's typical in any government. We see that on the county council with this use tax. They're like, we'll put it on November ballot. Then we'll put it on April ballot. And if we have to keep putting it on there till you say yes, I think that just ticks people off is what I think.
I do, too. I mean, it's just human nature for people to react that way, right?
I just wish, like you said, Mark, that the sides would be honest about what's really at stake in these amendments, particularly with regard to Amendment 3. I mean, I worked very hard in the legislature to protect unborn children. But I just wish the proponents of Amendment 3 would be honest and just tell people what this does. This bans abortion. That's what it does. Instead of putting up signs that say, you know, it's about eliminating transgender surgery for minors or some.
And here again, I have to agree with him.
Like
because
that.
let me tell you, I know what you're talking about. I see the billboards, right? That is being dishonest with the electorate. I'm sorry. I know it's ballot candy, right? This is what they do. But I do think it's hard for me to sit here and say that's not, you know, disingenuous, because you can put that up there on your billboard if you also talk about the abortion issue, but that's not what's happening. Now, this is what happens in politics. You get commercials and ads are going to be taken out and the trans issue is hot. So people are going to react to that. But it's not the most forthright campaign on that issue.
There's big money coming into the state from out of the state to get people to vote no on 3. Why? You got to ask the question, why? Why is all this money coming into Missouri to try to get people to keep abortion 100% legal? Almost under every circumstance.
And by the way, there are exceptions for rape and incest in this. That was sort of a compromise.
Mother's health.
Right, exactly. Let's take you to some national, international stuff right now. We're sitting in this war right now. I don't know if we're almost done with the war, not almost done with the war, if the strait is open, if the strait isn't open. Here's what I do know, though, as we are approaching Labor Day and Labor Day weekend, is I drove around yesterday morning, had to take my little kitten to get his manhood taken away. He's doing fine, by the way, in case the audience wants to know.
We should outlaw that.
right. Yeah, the poor little guy. But I saw $4 gas prices, $3.99. Mm-hmm. You know, those aren't going down. They're not going down by November. The administration keeps writing this off as something that, you know, gas prices were higher under Joe Biden. Tim, I don't care about that. And I don't think most voters care about that right now. I think a lot of people are drawn to this Democrat socialism stuff because if you're in the stock market, if you have a 401k and all those things, you're feeling pretty good right now, I think. I know I do. But if you don't have that, you feel like the system is kind of rigged against you. And it's dangerous because I think these Democrat socialist candidates are very dangerous. But economically, now there was good news on jobs today. Mm-hmm. So we do have some good economic news. But gas prices and the price of inflation, whether people are interpreting it accurately or not, it's a mindset and it's going to hurt Republicans.
Yeah, it's the economy, stupid. We've heard that for how many decades now? It's the economy. It's the economy. And I don't know that the president will have any control over oil prices between now and November's elections. So it is going to hurt the Republicans. Now, remember, two times in 50 years, basically the president, the party of the president kept, you know, the
it's
other two
rare.
Branches. So, you know, Trump says this is going to be the third time we're going to keep them. We're going to keep both the House and the Senate. I'm not convinced of that. So I don't know that I'd want to be a Republican in an area that is kind of purple. Because like my state legislator, I mean, he wins by 20 votes, 25 votes. I don't know, especially with Amendment 3 going to be on the ballot and all the Trump, you know, everything that Trump's trying to do as far as, you know, you still got the immigration issue, too, that's still lurking out there right now. So I don't think the war is going to be over. I know J.D. Vance said the other day that, well, there's really not a war going on right now. We do have these tit for tat things. Well, I'm sorry, if people are sending rockets your way,
yeah, that sounds
you call
like
it what you want. So I don't know that that's going to be resolved by then.
But here's the good news, Ted. Your side has crazy people running. And, you know, they're not distancing themselves from more crazy people. Now, I can admit, and I have admitted, that Ken Paxton's a flawed candidate in Texas. That looks like a much closer race than people anticipated. I don't know that I buy the polling, only because the polling was very flawed from the races 6 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, whenever that was. Michigan looks like El Sayed, despite his radical tendencies, is hanging in there. Now, this could all change. After Labor Day, you guys know this. People start pouring money in. The ads will start kicking in. People's minds might be changed. But you guys do have a socialism communist problem. Would you admit that?
No, I would
come
not
on,
admit
Ted.
Are
you kidding
problem.
Me?
It's Donald Trump who cuddles up to the communist
it's,
brutal dictators.
You guys, that's
Kim
all you
Jung
have is
un,
this bad okay. orange man.
Yeah, I mean, listen, so affordability is a real issue. The people I hang around with are concerned about the price of groceries and the price of gas, even though Trump says that affordability is a hoax. I think it's real. I think that the cost of living is a very real issue, as Tim says. So, you know, and as far as our candidates go, Mark, I mean, we've got a lot of great candidates. I know a lot of these people, particularly the local ones. It's just inevitable that the distress in the economy that we're seeing right now is going to play out in November. But here's the warning I would have for Democrats. You know, MAGA's collapsing. We see the Republicans in Missouri constantly overreaching and misstepping. But and so the Republican stock is not very high right now. But my warning for Democrats is that doesn't mean people love Democrats.
And well, because they don't. And the polling shows that that's not the case.
That's right.
Either.
And so Democrats need to be very careful about how they play this and promote the real solutions that they have to try to improve, give access to health care, protect public education, do the things, you know, support working families, labor unions, the things that Democrats have always done.
Republicans
and emphasize
do that
those
now
bread
too.
And butter issues.
I always supported labor unions when I was a Republican on the council.
Good.
So so what I will tell you though is why hasn't the Democrat Party said DSA folks, go start your own party?
Yeah, Rahm Emanuel is kind of the only person that's saying
get
that.
Get out of here. Get out of here. Go do your own thing. Well, that and if the answer to that is no, we don't want them to go do their own thing. If I'm a Democrat, that means I welcome them. That's
well,
how I'd see it.
Both parties have their extremists.
Sure.
I mean, let's not pretend that Democrats are not the only big tent party. But I think obviously they're trying to build a coalition. Look, if the people of Michigan nominate someone who calls himself a Democrat socialist, then that's up to the people of Michigan.
Well, he really doesn't call him. So that's the
well,
thing.
That's
he does
true.
Not
was,
call himself a DSA candidate. There's other.
That
but,
was not the best example.
Yeah, but no, but
he's the mayor of New York.
It's still a good example because El Sayed has got some radical positions that he hasn't completely backed away from. Mm-hmm. And I would think that, you know, in the end, it's impossible for me to think. I'm thinking more of Texas. Michigan's a little weird, but, you know, football's kicking in. And if you got some ads that are running reminding people that, you know, El Sayed thinks it's full of toxic masculinity, that might not play too well with the alumni of Michigan and Michigan State and all those other schools up there. But he, you know, he's an example of someone that is hanging in there in the polls right now. And Tallarico is too. And the unusual thing about Texas, and my friend Bill King, who's down in Houston, was on with me a couple of days ago, is if you look at Beto O'Rourke's, no matter what you think about polling, when Beto was the nominee, he was never leading in any of the polls. In this case, that's a little different. You know, Tallarico has had a lead in many of the polls. In fact, in more of the recent polling, he's held more of a lead than Ken Paxton.
If Democrats will focus on the core Democrat issues, supporting working families, quality of living, affordability, supporting public education, access to health care, those kinds of things, protecting democracy and freedom, which is under attack constantly.
Oh, my God,
in
here's the democracy thing. Okay.
I happen to think democracy is important, and we need to stand up for it and protect it and protect the Constitution of the United States.
I think democracy is important, too. That's why I'm asking you why you're supporting communists, because we happen to think that our system is pretty good.
I have never supported a communist.
By the way, did you just say, just for clarification, did you just say that there were actually Democrats on the ballot in Missouri? Are there Democrats on the ballot in November?
Yes, there are.
That's breaking news, too. We're coming back with more. All right, we just have a couple more minutes left here on a Friday Reardon Roundtable with Tim Fitch and Ted House on the panel. I will tell you that Dave Murray's going to join us after the top of the hour, talk about the heat wave and the weekend, a little sticky out there and very, very hot. Paul Hall with recommendations on some entertainment. And we'll also hear from Cusumano as the Cardinals dropped that third game to the Dodgers. Mizzou in action last night. Great first half, not a great second half. I asked these guys, you didn't, either of you watch the game. Tim, you didn't watch the game? There you go. Mike's on now.
I did not.
Ted, you didn't watch the game?
Oh, I'm a baseball guy.
What the hell? Who did I invite in here for this roundtable afternoon?
I was at the Cardinals game Friday. We can talk about that all you want.
All
versus
right.
The Pirates.
Well, yeah. I think we got to talk about the Cardinals. Was that a good game?
Yeah,
that was the only game they won last weekend. Right.
That's right.
All right. Well, I was going to talk about football with you guys, but I can't do that. Here, you got to listen to this because this got some attention yesterday, and we're all people who remember the 80s, right? So this is actor Ryan Reynolds, and he was on a red carpet. He's got a show called Mayday that's coming on Apple TV Plus. Actually, it's got some inspiration from the 80s in 80s movies, but he also just said something very confusing on a red carpet when promoting the show.
What's interesting about when you get far enough away from a time period that's quite distinct, I think there's always a lovely feeling associated with it. It's almost like you pave over all the trauma with like puppy dogs and ice cream. And the 80s was a brutal, brutal time for people. It was a f***ing mess.
What?
Like, you know, people forget that it was like, that was a tremendous strife, sociopolitical tensions everywhere. Mm. You know, we're still like pretty fresh off like a Cuban Missile Crisis, which is only like, what, 15, 20 years before.
All right, he goes on. I'm going to cut it off right there. But I mean, I don't know what he was talking about. First of all, I love the 80s. I had too much fun in the 80s, which is why I quit drinking in 1990. But my goodness, the music, the movies, the culture, all these things that were great about the 1980s. What's wrong with Ryan Reynolds, Tim Fitch?
You know, he was like 9 years old in the 80s. So what does he remember about the 80s?
I don't think he remembers much at all. It was just one of those. I think sometimes actors, they're asked questions on a red carpet, and I think he just got completely lost on that one.
Clearly. No doubt about that. But, you know, my first remembrance of the 80s is when Ronald Reagan got shot. You know, I was in first year in college when that happened. So that it didn't start off well for me because I liked Ronald Reagan. But I mean, the rest of the decade, it was like I had work to do. I was having kids and blah, blah, blah. So no, I was pretty good. I can't complain.
Like I was a rock and roll jack back then. That was fun. Are you kidding me? I had the long hair past my shoulders, all these things. I love the 80s.
I was arresting people like you.
you were, weren't you?
I was in law school. I spent the 80s in the library. Oh, it wasn't much fun. But it was morning in America, as
that's
I recall.
Boring. So. Where did you go to law school, by the way?
University of Missouri at Kansas City.
Oh, you went to UMKC?
Yep.
Okay, interesting. Well, you know, let me just kind of finish here and wrap on the Cardinals too, because Ted, you mentioned you're a baseball fan. Fred and I, you know, and I have friends, we still are very concentrating on the Redbirds and the rest of the season. I wish they would have won last night. Riley kind of blew that one in the ninth inning, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but it was nice to get two victories. And we got two guys on this team that have more than 100 RBIs. That's incredible. It really is. So the future does seem kind of bright. These guys don't give up. I wish that we wouldn't have blown that one last night. It would have been nice to have a little sweep of the Dodgers. Now we go into Colorado, and for whatever reason, we don't seem to do well against the Rockies, right? So let's hope for the best this weekend.
Are we still running in last place for the wild card?
Well, maybe technically. I think that's a little bit over our skis at this point. But look, what you want to do, I think, for the next few weeks, and you're going to see some guys on the field that you don't even know the names of, and you want to see some movement in a proper direction. Now, the bad news is what's his name, is going to Tommy John surgery. Hmm. Now I'm forgetting who it is. Ted, do you know who that is?
Well, I don't recall, but I can tell you that the Cardinals have overachieved, and even though it doesn't look like they're going to make the wild card this year, it's an exciting team to watch, and I'm very, very excited about next year, if there is a next year, with
the
strike.
That's the problem, because it looks like we're going to have a lockout, and you don't know when maybe that's going to happen or if that's going to interfere with the season, but it does seem like it might. And that's just sad, because we remember what happened in the 90s, and you just don't want it to happen again. And unfortunately, they seem to be heading in that direction. Now, look, I am a fan of the salary cap, so I would support a salary cap.
There absolutely needs to be a salary cap. I hope the players will eventually give in on that. One time, my father, who taught me to love baseball, said that baseball must surely be a wonderful game to have survived the greed and stupidity of the owners and players all of these years.
Hunter Dobbins, by the way, he had elbow surgery on Wednesday to repair ligament and flexor tendon. He's out for a year, so that kind of sucks. Ted House, great to see you. You wanted to talk about the St. Charles County executive race. I'll give you time to mention the candidate. You want to mention the candidate?
Yeah, my friend Steve Aylman, whom I served with in the St. Charles County Courthouse and in the Missouri House and in the Missouri Senate, is running against a really cool guy by the name of David Veneziano, who is the Democratic nominee for county executive in St. Charles County. Wonderful guys, got a pure heart, a lot of great ideas, and really, really fits well the values of the people of St. Charles
County. But he's going to get killed in that race. Yeah,
so we know it's going to be neck and neck all the way to the finishing.
Yeah, unless Steve Aylman gets caught in bed with a dead woman or a live boy.
We're safe. Tim, great to see you. Thanks for coming in, Ted House. Have a great Labor Day weekend, guys.
Thank you
so much.
Get more at 971talk.com.